win!
Chicago Sports Conversation is now. The Beat on 720 WGN.
Wow. I like that open there, Dan Long. I like it. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Harry Tynewitz. This indeed is The Beat 310. Good afternoon. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Harry's working very hard on some information right now, so I get to fly solo for like 2 minutes here, which is very enjoyable. All right, fine, it's over.
Like you haven't flown solo before.
Great to see you, Harry Tynewitz.
Great to see you. I heard you on an overnight show. And
you
it
did?
Was, yes, and you were technically by yourself in studio, but it was like you were having a party, Mark Kerman.
Well, that's what I like to do. I live my life as just a nonstop fiesta, Harry. I wake up in the morning and I start dancing.
You said fiesta, not siesta, right?
Right.
Very important. Big difference. And you're at the Carm for people that want to follow you on Twitter.
That's correct. At the Carm and at Hey Tweet Harry. A very busy show today with you till 6:30. Half hour short for Blackhawks hockey. Northwestern basketball tonight at the United Center, 6 o'clock. You can listen to that one on AM 1000, Dave Ennett, Joey Meyer on the call, and I will miss them tonight.
Yes, could be a special season for Northwestern basketball, by the way.
That's a big game tonight. The Cats right now are 39 RPI, and Dayton is 22. So this is an interesting one as far as playing it out all the way down the line. But at any rate, Harry.
Yes, sir.
We're going to talk double standards in sports today. We're going to talk to Sam Acho of your Chicago Bears and Walter Payton Award nominee. Great, great man at 4:45 today. You don't put that down on your docket, something to do. But let's start with our former hero, the man who I thought was going to be on the mound when the Cubs won the World Series after they traded for him. I had a big issue with it. Cub fans showing that, hey, domestic violence, that's not cool, but it is cool, or at least it's okay if you can throw 105 miles an hour and help us win. That was basically the reaction when we got Aroldis. Past is the past. This guy can help us win. I'm in. And he did, by the way.
Yes, he did. And he was called on to throw like he had never thrown before. He had never had an 8-out save. But there was a game 5 where the Cubs had to win, or it was Oba, and he went out and got an 8-out save.
He did.
And then he came back game 6 when it was 7-2, and even though Rizzo hit a bomb and the Cubs went up 9-2, he still came out in the 9th inning, and then he was back again the very next night. So he was used an awful lot by Joe Maddon, who the Cubs wouldn't win the World Series without, the greatest manager in the world, Joe Maddon.
Correct. Well, I don't know about the greatest manager in the world, but I get the sentiment. It's a very nice, positive Joe Maddon feel, and despite the fact that I have pointed out numerous times throughout Joe Maddon's tenure here that there's just some moves that I don't agree with. I think that he gets a little panicky at times and a little, we have to absolutely win now, and I'm going to overuse Pedro Strop, and I'm going to overuse Travis Wood, who apparently is can we get a 4 or 5 year deal with the Marlins?
Looks like. He and Rizzo are the longest tenured Cubs, not to be just Rizzo. There were definitely things for Cubs fans like you and I to be upset about.
Or just not even upset, just critical or analytical. I don't know what the word is. I just, you know, he's not a perfect person. That's
no, fine. No. He should have never had Javi Baez try a suicide squeeze with 2 strikes. And he took Kyle Hendricks out way too early, took John Lester out way too early in game 7. But as we've discussed, because of the culture that he created, the Cubs were able to come back from giving up the lead and winning the World Series.
Right. So here's Aroldis signing with the Yankees, 5 years, $86 million. And we've got this with the translator.
See.
So here, let's give it a spin here on old 720 WGN. Aroldis being asked about Joe Maddon and how he was used in the World Series.
Personalmente, lo que pienso que él me usó no correctamente.
So personally, you know, the way he used me during the playoffs,
It was, I believe there were a couple times where maybe I shouldn't be put in the game and he put me in. Personally, I don't agree the way he used me. But he is the manager and he has a strategy. You know, my job is to be ready.
So there you go. Aroldis and the translator. Here's the thing. I don't agree with everything that has ever been chosen about my profession. Hey, Carm, will you do X, Y, Z? Okay, sure, I will. But I don't go run my mouth when I disagree. And here's a guy who got to come to the greatest city on the planet, play at the greatest ballpark in the world, and be a part of a World Series championship. And for him to come out and speak against the Cubs, it's ridiculous.
He did not get hurt. Joe Maddon's moves did not like rip his arm off and he can never pitch again. He signs this unbelievably massive deal with the Yankees after he's won his World Series ring, and then he's gonna like fire on Joe Maddon. You know, it's one thing if you know you tell that to your friends, but you know, for that to be like your public comment, there's such a great vibe going on now with Theo and Jed and the Cubs. Just, you know, man, don't kill our buzz, dude.
Well, then that's the thing. Like, this Maddon thing, first of all, if they had lost the World Series, if it had gone standard Cub way, he would be getting absolutely annihilated.
Roasted.
It's still alive right now. I mean, this is a talking point. Comcast Sportsnet is being like going down to Florida to interview Maddon and talk about his decisions. Ken Rosenthal's lurking around corners. What about that? What about that bias thing there, Joe? I mean, next thing you know, Todd Manley's going to call at the Carm and say, you know what, go on down there and find out what the real deal is here with Joe Maddon. You can come too, Harry, if you'd like.
Yay! I love Florida.
Right. Send the whole sports department, Dave Bennett, Kevin Powell, the whole thing. We'll all go down there because we got. Well, let's get to the root of this. It's not dying out is the point here. And Aroldis just threw more logs on the fire.
It seems to me that there are people that, you know, have fired on management before when they have been far worse off. As you point out, he won the World Series. For a team that hadn't won the World Series in a century, he got an $86 million contract. Are you really going to fire on him? No,
it's impressive. I heard, too, that... And we talked about this with John a second ago, but the Cubs never called. They never picked up the phone.
Right, let him go. Let him go.
Hey, Aroldis, what type of, we're hearing that it's you got a 5-year deal over there. Is there any chance that you would be willing to sign here for 2 and X? I know, did you love it here? Like that, they didn't even make that call. They didn't even want to know. They didn't even want to, I mean, they were not willing to get the no. Sometimes, you know, you see the beautiful girl in the bar. If you have the old temerity, you walk up and you say, hey.
Temerity, look at you.
Yeah, can I buy you a drink? And then you get...
Go to dictionary.com for a second, Carmen.
You know, go temerity. Ahead. Did I use it properly?
Oh, yes, you did.
I think I did. But the point is that, you know, if you got a little guts, you walk on up, you ask. And then you say something like, so, are you dating anyone? And then they say, yes, I am. And then you know you're out. The Cubs weren't even, they didn't even care. I don't think it was a lack of quote-unquote temerity. They didn't even, they looked at the hot girl in the bar and was like, you're a nightmare and I don't want to hang out with you for a second because you're just a disaster despite your beautiful looks. I mean, that's what Aroldis Chapman really is.
Right, as hot as you are, as exciting as it was.
As 105 mile per hour as you are.
You're so not worth it.
You're just not worth it. You don't want to be put in games where we're up 7-2. You think you're above it. It wasn't just in the World Series that happened. They put him in against the Dodgers in the NLCS. He was rested, but the Cubs were up a bunch. He pitched terribly because he didn't think he should be out there. I mean, this wasn't the first judgment that he had. He had clear ideas. It was very obvious by his performance and how poorly he pitched in games that were not tight that he just was not mentally into it. I'm sorry. I think this is wrong. I shouldn't be out here. I'm above this. He is exactly what I'm trying to describe here, is that prima donna who has an inflated viewpoint of himself, and he's a great, great, great pitcher. But even when you're that talented, if you have that attitude, you really, that guy, you're replaceable, man.
temerity.
Wade Davis. What does temerity mean?
Wade Davis is, you know, he's had some phenomenal numbers with the Royals. I mean, you know, Theo and Jed, we've never believed more in Theo and Jed. I think Wade Davis is going to come in here, and if he's healthy, he's going to be spectacular. And we also got a new setup guy. So I think the Cubs are going to be very strong at the back end of their bullpen. This is Cambridge English Dictionary. Temerity is a willingness to do or say something that shocks or upsets other people.
Okay, that's a little bit wrong, poorly used, but mostly correct. I'm not trying to shock anybody walking up to him in the bar or on the street.
No, but I mean, it's upsetting what he said. You know, I don't know why after the fact. It wasn't like, hey, you know, I can't get another job because of this, or we lost the World Series because of this, or you personally tried to, you know, you personally screwed me because of this.
I want to talk trust in Theo coming back here. And,
okay.
And also there's a, for the elite level people who have primetime tickets at the Chicago Cubs, their future bill came out, and it's in the six figures.
I always thought I had elite tickets at the Cubs.
You used to. You don't have the elite. We'll explain that coming back here. This week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot shine a light on those in our city that devote their lives to making the world a better place. Chicago's Best, giving back. That's Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. You want to jump on in, feel free. 312-981-7200. It's The Beat. He's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Harmon. 720 WGN. Good afternoon. It's The Beat. He's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Harmon. With you till 6:30 ahead of Blackhawks hockey, the Northwestern Wildcats basketball team at the United Center tonight, taking on the Dayton Flyers. Dave Annett, Joey Meyer, 6 o'clock on AM 1000. Harry, you're smiling.
I'm just happy to be here with you, and I'm thinking the Blackhawks have a little score to settle in St. Louis. They beat them at home. They're 1-1 on the year with the Blues, as you know, but I don't like what happened last year. I hate the way the Hawks season ended, and I think that the Hawks will go into St. Louis tonight and make the Blues fans even bluer.
That's the plan, baby. 312-981-7200. You're just joining us. We're talking about Aroldis Chapman ripping the Cubs. Simple question for you, by the way. Nobody, I think, disagrees with what Aroldis said, right? He was used improperly in the World Series. I'm saying he shouldn't have said anything, but do you give him the okay? Hey, he just said the truth. He was speaking the truth. Good thing to speak truth, Terry. Speak the truth. Well, how do you feel about me? Tell me right now. Go ahead.
Don't you think, considering what he got out of the situation, he was treated tremendously here, okay? Yeah, at the first press conference, somebody brought up a question that needed to be asked, but the New York media is like, you know, three times the people, and they ask, you know, 20 times the personal questions. The Cubs treated Aroldis great. They gave him a chance to close for the most special of Cubs seasons. Why after the fact, Aroldis?
We're going to role play this after the 3:30 news. But
I love it when you role play.
I love a good role play. Hey, Tom, welcome to WGN. I see you waiting patiently. What's up, Tom?
Well, thank you. I just think that the man answered the question that was asked. If he would have said something different, people would have said he's disingenuous and he's a liar and
he's
rotten guy and so forth. The man answered the question that was asked. Where is the media involved here? How come the media gets the pass? Chapman is exactly right. All of the lemmings. You know, Joe Maddon, he nearly snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory. Now, you guys can follow this thing all you want and say what a great guy he is and Groovy Joe and his pajamas and stuff and this crap with his smirk when he says, well, the result is that we won the championship, so that's all I know. Well, that's garbage. That's garbage. Because what, can Wade Davis pitch five innings? He's going to have to. Because Groovy Joe says that was the right way to do it.
Okay, Tom, take a breath. Let's have a little bit of a conversation here. Because I think we're getting to the heart of the matter here. You were mad at the media, but really what your beef is here is with Joe Maddon. You think Joe Maddon's overrated. Is that right?
Well, I think his game in-game stuff is overrated. I mean, look, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. He may be the greatest of all-time managers, and it may be the reason the Cubs ever got there. It may be true. I don't know. I'm not in the dugout. I'm not in the clubhouse. I don't know all that stuff. I just know, and I'm not mad at the media. All I'm saying is The man was asked a question. He gave the honest answer, the factual honest answer, because if he wasn't overused, chances are, well, I guess it can't be a fact, but chances are this wouldn't have happened.
But Tom, what do you do for a living?
I am a business owner.
You're a business owner.
Yes.
Do you have any employees that you're not thrilled with right now?
No, I don't have employees I'm not thrilled with. I like my employees.
You like every single one of them, huh? You know what?
Carm, I'm not the kind of guy to sit there and complain about people I got. I don't fire people. I don't do that stuff.
That's exactly my point. We're talking about. You know, this is after the fact, after he won the World Series ring, after he got an $86 million contract. If you had an employee who you treated great, and, you know, you had other people that could do his job and he had a chance to go on somewhere, why, after he went on somewhere, would he criticize you? He's kind of, you know. And,
Tom, you just were super professional, and you didn't want to knock maybe one of your employees, perhaps, who showed up 15 minutes late three times this week. You know why? Because you're a class guy.
But why ask the question then? If Chapman was not to answer the question, why was it asked? If the World Series was done, he won it, he got his new contract, all that stuff, why even consider a question about it, about the Cubs?
The question's asked, Tom, because we want to see what he's going to say. Now, most likely he's not going to say anything, but this guy jumped into it.
He could have
said it, though. Okay, you just said it now, Carm. You guys goaded him, not you.
I would say goaded.
An answer, he jumped into it.
He could have.
But you wanted that answer.
But, Tom, I don't love the media, by the way, and I also don't love myself, which I'm working on, by the way.
I love WGN. I love WGN always had for 56 years, and I love the Cubs. But I'm not a lemming who's going to just say that Joe Maddon did the right stuff.
Neither are we.
He won in spite of him when it came to those games.
All right.
I don't know about the rest of those games.
Tom, great call. We got news, and so we could talk to you.
Tom,
thanks,
Tom. Man. He could have simply answered the question without the whole, you know, oh, he used me wrong. He could have just, you know, answered that question in one word.
Well, and it's also
sentence.
It's also who he is. Like, listen, if Chris Bryant or Anthony Rizzo, somebody of that ilk, they have a little more cachet to say something. Aroldis Chapman, with his history and how long he's been here. Dude.
If Aroldis goes in the Hall of Fame, he won't be going in as a Cub.
I don't think he'll be wearing a Cub hat. 720 WGN. He's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Carmen. Good afternoon. 3:38. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Papa Fred turned 91 yesterday, Harry.
Oh, that's awesome. Tell your dad I said happy birthday.
Big little Greek dinner for the Carmen family last night.
Greek dinner?
Yeah, don't worry that everybody was late. We all made it eventually.
Now, did your dad go to a Greek restaurant?
We went to a Greek restaurant. Yes, we would not. Nobody cooks.
That's so great that he moves around and he gets around at 91. That's spectacular.
Called him up yesterday at 6 o'clock. I said, Papa Fred, snowing outside. Roads are rough. Probably not a great idea to have this dinner tonight. Or maybe we should come all the way out to the suburbs and see you. Mark, I'm leaving now. Click.
He got there on his own?
Yeah, through the snow. Guy's like Santa himself going.
Wait, he drives by himself?
Yes.
That's awesome.
No. He's very, very, very competitive. He likes to do things on his own.
Did you go to Greektown?
No, we went to a little Tui, little Cicero, in Cistaria.
Oh, nice.
You ever been to a Cistaria?
Nice. I've been by it 100 times. I hear it's great. I've never been there.
They do a fine job. All right, let's get back on track. I'm sorry. I just brought up my life. So we were talking about Aroldis Chapman. And a lot of people are just defending Aroldis Chapman on the text line. Let's see here. 847. You know how the Cubs management told Maddon to use Chapman as they weren't going to re-sign him? Maddon got caught up in that, and they won. That's from Mitch. That's not necessarily defending Chapman, but I actually like this text the most from the 514. Harry, apologize to Carm right now. He used temerity properly. It's basically bold, foolish, reckless, or audacity.
I didn't say he used it in the wrong way. I just gave you the dictionary definition of it.
Okay.
Yeah, and
I didn't feel attacked. Just
no, when you asked did I use it in the right way, I said yes.
414, Chapman answered the question that he was asked. When he gave up that home run in Game 7, he was devastated. He never refused to go into a game and pitch, even though he was going to be a free agent at the end of the season. You could have said he wasn't going in, he was tired, but he did what the manager asked him to do. We want honesty in our athletes from the 414.
You know, we do want honesty in our athletes, and I have to be careful of being hypocritical, but he could have simply said, you know, I can't believe I pitched so much. You know, that's all he needed to say.
Yeah, or he could have just said, I love being used a lot. It's great to be out there. There's nothing that can stop me, and I'm so happy that we ended up winning, even though I didn't pitch great in Game 7.
Right. He could have said, oh, my God. You know, I mean, I had a chance to go up against, you know, the Indians on the biggest stage in the baseball world, and, you know, an 8-out save at Wrigley was the, you know, best night of my career.
That would have been fine. You guys are missing the point. Was Chapman, you're not listening to the whole conversation. At the end, he says it's the coach's decision to just, so we should just drop it.
He did say, he said, it's my job and it's the coach's decision, but it's what he said before that we're talking about.
Right. I don't think he gets a pass on what he said at the end. The bottom line is, I thought I was going to miss Aroldis Chapman. I wanted the Cubs to be aggressive in re-signing Aroldis Chapman because of his eliteness. I'm good with no Aroldis Chapman.
Right, here's a pregunta for you.
Okay.
If the Yankees don't come to Wrigley Field this year, but correct?
Mm-hmm.
But if Aroldis Chapman were to come to Wrigley Field and be called into the game, would people boo him?
I think he'd get cheered.
I think he would get massive cheers.
Yeah.
We still have great memories of Aroldis Chapman. We're just saying we don't dislike him. We're just saying he could have handled this in a different, less attacking way.
Me personally, I wouldn't boo. I wouldn't cheer. I'd do nothing. But I kind of would sit there and hope he was, at least there would be some boos.
I would cheer. I would totally cheer.
I didn't feel comfortable cheering for him when they got him, period, because of his past.
His alleged past.
That's really not alleged. I don't think it's alleged. Dude fired 8 shots in a garage after, fine, allegedly pushing down his girlfriend.
That's the bad part.
Okay. I never really felt comfortable with him. And we had the conversation at the time. Hey, we good with this? Dude's got domestic abuse, but he's awesome in the ninth inning, baby.
Chicago's been doing that. Professional sports has been doing that forever.
Of course.
The Bulls used a first-round pick about 25 years ago on a guy that was up for rape.
Quentin Daly, my man.
Quentin Daly.
No longer with us. 312-981-7200. Q could get a shot off, man. That guy had a great, great bank shot from about 16, a little left of the key.
They found him in his closet. They went to his apartment. They couldn't find him. He's like in his closet, hanging out.
He would order the sugar rope at the end of the bench when he wasn't playing. He'd get the
red licorice.
Yes,
thing?
He'd get them to go out to the concession, bring him the rope, and he'd eat it. Tell me you don't want that guy.
Sports Illustrated printed the court transcript where, you know, the woman accusing him talked about what he did and what he said, and it was horrifying.
Yeah. Well, and they drafted him.
And they drafted him.
Right. Tony, welcome to 720 WGN. What's on your mind, Tony?
Hey, guys. Regarding Chapman, I thought he was pretty diplomatic in what he said. I mean, you got to remember, he's from another country where they don't handle things quite the same way we do. You know, I thought he was honest. It was refreshing. And I don't think Joe Maddon gets a pass. I thought that was one of the worst displays of management in that Game 6 that I've ever seen. Not only did he blow it with Hendricks, and he blowed it with Lester, he blew it with Chapman. I mean, he was determined to make each move worse than the last one. And I don't think we sweep it under the rug. Hopefully, we learn something from this, and maybe Maddon becomes a better manager going forward.
You want to fire Joe Maddon, Tony?
No, not fire him, but he wanted the World Series to be about him instead of being about the Cubs. He wanted to win the World Series because of his brilliant managing and not because of the superior team that he had on the field.
Does Joe Maddon strike you as that guy that he wants to
be
on?
Yes, he does.
Really?
Because he had failures in Tampa, and this was his chance at redemption. He had a superior team in Tampa and didn't win.
Go ahead, Harry.
Hang
on. Let's have a convo here. Hang on.
Who are some other head coaches? I'd like to ask you, like, do you think Belichick wants people to think – do you think Belichick wants the Patriots to win the Super Bowl so people will say he's a genius, or because he wants to win the Super Bowl?
Well, Well, I tell you, if he took out Brady in the first half and then put in somebody else and then took out that person in the second half and made bonehead moves, then maybe you could make that point. But he lets the team play as the team. I mean, there was no need to take Hendrick out. There was no need to take Lester out. There's no need to have your closer in there after a long day the night before.
Hey, wait,
throwing with the 6-run lead.
Tony, was he right to put Chapman in the seventh inning of Game 5?
Possibly. I got to remember that one. I just remember 6 really sticks in my craw as being just awful. I remember watching that, just going, I cannot believe that
it was a
triple-A manager would do this, let alone Joe Maddon.
Tony, it was a 1-run game. There were 7 outs to go. Maddon needed he wanted to go to his best right then, and they held on for a 1-run win. To jot in your memory, what do you think?
That was Game 5 you're talking about, correct?
Yep. They don't play Game 6 and Game 7, though, if they don't win Game 5.
Well, right, but now we're past Game 5. We're into Game 6.
Right.
We've got a big lead. We used Chapman the day before.
I know, but do you think he put him in?
Need him in a Game 7.
Tony, I agree with you. He threw 42 pitches in Game 5. 42 pitches.
That was his career high, right?
It was his career high. And you know, 8 outs, career. He had never done that before, an 8-out save. And then
you know
he threw 20 pitches in game 6. And specifically what drove me crazy was after Rizzo unloaded the 2-run homer, he still had him out there the next inning.
Tony, appreciate the phone call. I just want to get some more people in here. But the whole premise that Joe Maddon was managing because he wanted to get all the credit,
I disagree.
I just can't go there. I don't believe that to be true. 312-981-7200. I mean, everybody wants some level of credit. Harry, you're doing a great job today.
No, I don't think so.
No, you really are.
Joe Maddon is selfless.
And tell me how good I'm doing. Can you tell me how good I'm doing?
Mark, you look really nice.
Thank you, Harry. That's all I needed.
Do you have a date tonight?
I do.
Oh.
Me and you, we're going out. Coach, welcome to 720 WGN. What's up, Coach?
Gentlemen, tremendous show as always.
Thank
Henry,
you,
great to hear you again.
It's great to be on the air here at WGN, Coach.
Yep, so I'm getting a little tired of Carmen, but Harry, I always enjoy.
Well, the two of us together, now that's what you're tuned in for.
It is a rare combination. I hate to agree with the masses, but I, too, do not have that much of a problem with what Chapman said. My issue, though, is the whole concept of borrowing the player. So he comes to the Cubs for a month, month and a half, and then he's go back to his old team. Does that, to me, maybe I'm just old school, but to me it cheapens the sports and competitive experience.
Interesting take by the coach, who always has an interesting take. And and Coach, we appreciate it. There's something about that love of like a 69 Cub where there's Ernie and Ronnie and Billy and they're there for life. And it's so rare nowadays. And like, so we have this hired gun who's got domestic violence and he's going to come in here and he's kind of going to act like an ass. But we won. So it's all going to feel the same because that's where we live in.
It's the cost of doing business. It's how you win. It's what teams do. It's what teams do in every sport.
Right.
The White Sox signed a guy this week, okay? Derek Holland, the pitcher from the Rangers, who they will trade at the trading deadline. Okay, I would love the White Sox to have, you know, a great season, but I believe that they signed him and that they have an eye on moving him. The rent-a-player thing happens every year in Major League Baseball.
But Coach is longing for a different time when things were simpler, where everybody wasn't on their phone every day, that you could go outside in the neighborhood and have a catch, and there'd be other people out there. He's romanticizing
have a catch.
Romanticizing the past. And I think, you know, it's always good to live in the present. That's probably the goal for all of us. But I understand where Coach is coming from, where it just doesn't feel as good to him.
You know, I am a numbers savant, and I remember I remember most every number of people that, you know, have played since I was a little kid, and it's much harder to memorize numbers now because guys change teams so often. So Chapman was 54, and I'll always remember him as 54, but there are guys that are one number with one team and another number. Tony Snell was 20 with the Bulls. He's 21 now for the Bucks.
Sweeping the Bulls in a back-to-back.
Oh,
Sweeping
is too kind a word.
That's true.
They assaulted the Bulls.
Whoever thought I would say the words that I'm about to say right now that maybe others are saying too? Wow, it'd be nice if they had Tony Snell back.
Don't say
that. Oh, my God, are they bad right now for a while.
Little speed bumps.
Yeah. 720 WGN. He's Harry Tynewitz. I'm Mark Kerman. We're here till 6:30. It's The Beat. Don't forget Northwestern basketball, 6 o'clock on AM 1000. Dave Ennett, Joey Meyer, and then 6:30 tonight, Blackhawks and the Blues. Judd Surratt with your pregame.
The Blackhawks!
Yes, indeed. So just one real quick before we get back into the conversation here of important things. But text line says, Carm, who the heck calls it a sugar rope? What do you call the long red rope that you buy at the United Center?
Welcome to my world. That is a super rope.
That's a super rope.
Yes, it's a super rope. You know, you're talking candy, you're talking concessions, food you could buy at games for $400, Alex. You're in my world. That is a super rope.
What did the super rope used to cost when, like, a young Harry was... Say at Chicago Stadium, getting ready for a Blackhawks and Blues.
When a young Harry was there, Dad was buying, so I never knew what it cost.
That's a beautiful thing.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Got to go to a lot of games, but Super Rope. I don't recall a lot of stories about a guy during the game getting a snack. Of course, the Packers had a guy, Ezra Johnson, who once ordered from a hot dog guy two hot dogs and ate the hot dogs. It was during a preseason game, and he took a lot of flack for it. So, like, the next game or two games later, he bought hundreds of hot dogs and just gave them to the fans.
I mean, if the dude's hungry and needs a little nourishment to get himself through the game, what's wrong with a mid-game hot dog?
Well, I don't know if it's on the training table, and B, to be standing on the sidelines.
Mowing hot dogs?
Right. Imagine you're watching the game, and again, I do believe it was a preseason game, number 90, Ezra Johnson. But imagine if you're watching the game tomorrow, and,
Sam Acho is joining the show at 4:45, orders a dog.
If Sam Acho were standing behind his teammates by the space heater, you know, roasting weenies, if he were eating hot dogs, that would not be cool.
Could he order a hot chocolate? Would that be okay? It's going to be cold.
I bet they have hot chocolate. They definitely have some heated drinks, right? I mean, they have Gatorade or some sports drink. I would think they'd have something hot.
Right, right. Well, by the way, we're going to get into the sleeveless Bears coming up a little bit later.
That's
in the program.
That's going to be a great conversation.
The text line coming back and calling it a red vine or licorice. Like a licorice rope.
Yeah. I think that's it's super rope. I'll check. They gave me a laptop. I'll double check.
I think sugar rope.
That was going to be my answer was super rope, so I could back Harry up on that.
Thank you, Dan.
But it is
Long.
Essentially a giant red vine, so I think that's also acceptable.
Super rope. I'm looking at the picture of it now. It's just giant red vine. Licorice.
Put in sugar rope, what comes up? I bet it's the same exact thing. Synonym for super rope.
Sugar rope, wasn't that the dancer that you dated for a while a couple years ago, sugar rope?
I never actually did date a sugar rope, but that would be fun. Sugar, what's going on?
You know, it was great when I was now sugar rope. I'm also seeing pictures of licorice. But it's
Thank
not,
you.
But it's not the big red vine that you buy.
But in the general ballpark?
Yeah. I mean, here, you can look. It looks more like what, candy canes or something.
I mean, I think I'm in the ballpark here.
You're in the ballpark. Well, when I was a kid, I used to love the bag that had, like, you know, 30 of the really thin red licorices. Those were good. Like spaghetti.
Right. I've never been a huge licorice guy, to be honest with you, but I do like the sugar just because it's you could pull on it and then it would and there was just a whole thing.
Yeah,
plus, you're just at the game, period. So there's that.
Everything
tastes better in the stadium.
We have a candy drawer in our house. It's not like the candy drawer I grew up with. Remind me, I know we're up against news, but remind me to tell you about the candy drawer later. But in the candy drawer we currently have in our house, which isn't as big, there's Twizzlers, and I never touch them.
Good for you. Right, it's an easy non-touch. Chocolate chip cookie, impossible not to touch.
They're gone.
Twizzlers can leave it there for years. Perfect Twizzler for years, ready, don't need it. Mm-hmm. Hey, coming back after 4 o'clock, there was a disturbing story that barely made a ripple here. And there's, I think people are looking at it sort of in a two-dimensional way. We're going to bring in the third dimension of a guy who's cheating college sports and... no longer has his job. We'll leave it at that. 720 WGN. Harry, what fight song is this?
Well, I've seen the movie Brian's Song. So, This is the Wake Forest Demon Deacons fight song.
You're probably the only one that knew that. A little louder, Dan. Let's hear it.
It also helped that I was here when you said, okay, Dan, time for the Wake Forest fight song.
Yeah, that might have been a slight benefit to you to answer that question.
Yes.
So why are we playing the Wake Forest Demon Deacon fight song? If you're following the news this week, you know the reason to that. His name is Tommy Elrod. Who is Tommy Elrod, for those not in the know? Well, Tommy Elrod played quarterback for Wake Forest from 1993 to 1997. He was then an assistant coach for over 10 years with the Demon Deacons, 11 years, as Tommy Elrod did everything he possibly could to help Wake Forest win football games. He moved up to quarterback coach, the whole deal. Now, Tommy, Wake Forest went through a coaching change. One coach resigned. Jim Grobe came in. Jim Grobe said, Tommy, I hear you do great work, but Tommy, I don't have a spot for you. Tommy, the university does. You're going to be the radio color commentator. You're going to be the Ted Albrecht of the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. Tommy said, cool. Tommy then hung around the program. Tommy then proceeded to tell secrets about Wake Forest starting back in 2014, game plans and what was going on behind the scenes, different plays to other schools, and Tommy finally got found out. Now, he got found out because the Demon Deacons left behind some of their notes after they played the Louisville Cardinals on November the 12th, and then a formal investigation. Hey, how in the world do they know about all this stuff? Formal investigation starts, leads to Elrod. Elrod now fired. He lives in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, the home of the Demon Deacons. He's got kids in school there. His family. This is his whole life.
Oh, it's horrifying how it affects the other people that he loves and what's going to happen next.
Right. And it's terrible, and he's wrong, right? You can't cheat yourself. You can't cheat your school.
It's about the worst thing. You know, I mean, he wasn't supplying his players with test scores. He wasn't supplying his players with drugs. He wasn't giving his players, you know, access to, you know, women. But he went against the heart and soul of competition. He gave the other team their playbook.
Right. And this story, it registered a little, but it didn't register much, even nationally. And I was thinking about it from a local perspective. Like, let's just say that this was going on at Michigan,
mm-hmm,
or at Ohio State, or at any, for that matter, even at Northwestern locally. But on a national scale, if it was a big-time school, if it was Alabama, the radio guy is informing other teams, and other teams are saying absolutely nothing. They're taking the information, and the only reason why this ever came out was because they left behind their notes, and all of a sudden it was found out. Here's Louisville with all this stuff. They leave it behind. Somebody from Wake Forest says, why? How do they know all this stuff? Nobody ever confessed to it. And this is supposed to be college athletics. There's supposed to be a drop of integrity. Instead, all these schools, at least three schools, maybe more,
right,
were taking information to their benefit and just letting this all be dark and silent because they were trying to win a football game. I mean, how wrong is that?
It's terrible. It's awful. Army and Virginia both confirmed that they were contacted by Wake Forest to inform them that Elrod passed on information to their teams. So both of those schools now are investigating the matter.
And what's going on in Louisville?
Louisville, they suspended the co-offensive coordinator. They made a comment when this first came out saying that, you know we got the information, but nothing happened, so we're not suspending anybody. And then this week, they did suspend the co-offensive coordinator because that's Coach Galloway. He is not going to be allowed to participate in the Citrus Bowl effective immediately. He stopped being allowed to go to practice because the commissioner of the ACC explained to him that the second this guy got the information, he should have said, whoa, I was just handed information from the other team, and I'm not accepting it. You know, here it is, and he didn't. He took it in. And also now, Wake Forest head coach Dave Clawson said that Louisville had the game plan before the game was played, and as a result of that, they couldn't use plays that they had spent the majority of the week practicing.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? How about Bobby Petrino? Not exactly Mr. Integrity himself. Massive issues basically wherever he goes. His comment on it, quote, I have no knowledge of the situation. We take a lot of pride in the way we operate our program. As I've stated already this season, my coaching philosophy has always been to play the game with sportsmanship. Right now, our focus is our game tomorrow at Houston, finishing the 2016 season strong. Head coach Bobby Petrino.
Not a big fan of Bobby Petrino.
And people are texting, how could you say this is the worst? Did you forget Penn State? We're not talking about
that
level of stuff. We're talking about on the field, coaches. It's a whole nother. We're not talking about Penn State level, sexual assault level stuff. By the way, that is coming up later in the program, but not right now. Let's have a clear understanding of what's going on here. This is football treason, and this is people accepting on the college ranks anything they can to win. Like even on the pro level, New England, Deflategate, go back to what do they call when they were taping players at practice?
Oh, taping practice. New England was taping the Jets practice.
Right.
Yeah, that wasn't giving them playbook.
But they were taping opposing players' practice to get information. I mean, it's gross and it's disgusting, and that's on the professional level. But I can remotely, there's a difference to me somehow, some way between the professional level and the college level. I mean, this to me is worse. You do have some mode of accountability that, okay, I'm trying to raise 18 to 22-year-olds, many of whom who did not have the greatest parent figures. Hello, you're a college football coach.
Yeah.
Right versus wrong, something. Am I nuts?
No, you're not nuts. It's wrong at any. I mean, if it were a high school coach doing it, it's still horrible. This team, you know, trust their coaching staff, and whether they come from the greatest family in the world and live in a beautiful home, or they come from a single parent home, and it's a tough path that they take to get to where they are in high school, in college, in the pros. You cannot give the other team the playbook. That's the very essence of the game, is we are going to compete with you. And they work all week on it. And, they work in the preseason. And this is horrible what the guy did. And so, I don't see how this guy, could ever be employed again.
He won't. He won't. But here's the third part of it. Let me just paint a picture here, right?
Yes.
Tommy Elrod had maybe the worst human tragedy that you can possibly have off the field, where his son was born, he lived to be 8 days old, and there's video out there of his younger son giving his dying brother a fist bump. So he lost his son. Okay, mm-hmm. one of the worst things you could possibly ever go through. Right. Then he goes and he gets his whole life he's been this Wake Forest Demon Deacon. And he ends up getting, Jim Grobe leaves, Dave Clawson, new coach, comes in, doesn't keep him, he loses his job.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's lost his son, and he's lost his job. And he's got this radio gig, which probably pays him 1/50th of what he was making. Or 1/20th, whatever, doesn't matter. A lot less money. So he's making less money, he doesn't have the job that he loves, and he's doing, and there's family tragedy too, however that's resonating. And so he clearly, at least from my amateur psychology, not knowing anything about him, he just lost himself. And so now what is he going to do? I'm so angry at the world or whatever it is, I'm going to start giving information because screw Wake Forest. I hate them.
I blame them.
I blame them. and he's not seeing himself at all. Like, I'm really just so super, I mean, these are, again, I don't know the man. But just logically, you've got to be incredibly angry at the world losing his son 8 days that he lived.
That would be the worst thing in the world.
Ever, right? And now he's fired. And so what? And this is where he goes to. Well, screw him. I'm gonna give out this information. However he feels like he's getting even. So I think there's just a little lesson in here for everybody, because we all deal with a lot of stuff, man. And here is a guy who clearly had a tragedy and a big time emotional career validation. A lot of people put a lot in their job, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with all that, and this is how he reacts. And now the fallout is even worse.
You know, I'm sure that stuff like this has happened before. I'm sure there have been, coaches fired or players cut that have, you know, passed along information to the team about to play their old team. Okay? So I don't think this is the first guy that's ever done it. But, you know, as far as I can remember, this is the first guy who got, you know, blatantly caught red-handed.
I mean, this would be almost like Ron Santo giving away Cubs secrets.
Ron Santo would never give away.
Santo would never give away Cubs. But this is a lifelong. He played there. He coached there. You would think he absolutely.
He lives there.
He eats
and breathes Wake Forest.
I mean, it's an incredible flip.
He's got to be in a very dark place to do this.
Right. So, I don't know if there's a lesson in this, but I feel like there is. So that's why I wanted to bring up Tommy Elrod.
Well, it's just.
I hope we learned something.
Yeah, I'm not.
Because that is brutal.
I'm not sure what I learned. I already knew this.
Well, if you're him now, what do you do?
You gotta get a job doing something else.
You gotta move. You cannot live there.
Yeah, something bad's gonna happen.
I mean, you are off to California.
You're somewhere.
Kids, I don't know how old his kids are, but however old they are, Dad messed up. We're on the move.
Witness relocation program, perhaps.
I mean, if he's assistant coach relocation program, he'll never work in college football again. He'll never get a broadcasting job again. He's got mouths to feed.
Yeah,
it's a lot. All right, let's talk about double standards coming back here, Harry.
Excellent.
You ready for a good double standard?
Hell yes.
All right, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, this is The Beat. He's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Carmen. Blackhawks hockey tonight at 6:30 on this very radio station. Did you see the new mask for Scott Darling, Harry Tynowitz?
It is awesome. Scott Darling has, this year he's using a Wayne's World mask, which is cool as hell. It's got Stan Mikita's donut shop from the movie Wayne's World, as well as Wayne and Garth. And Scott Darling is playing insane, by the way. He's playing like a number one goalie. And he's from Lamont, the Lord of Lamont, as he's been called. The new mask is for the Winter Classic. And, of course, that'll be on WGN Radio. That's January 2nd in St. Louis at some baseball stadium. Can't remember the name of it.
Irrelevant,
as that team is now. Scott Darling's Winter Classic mask is a tribute to the Cubs. It has Anthony Rizzo, it has Wrigley Field, and it has Harry Carey on the mask. So Corey Crawford is due back shortly. He's skating again. He faced shots in practice. He will probably get the nod that day, but Corey Crawford has created a new mask for the Winter Classic, and it's a tribute to the Cubs. Again, it's got the famous Wrigley Field marquee on the corner of Clark and Addison, Anthony Rizzo, a couple of Rizzo images, and Harry Carey.
You remember when Scott Darling said, I love Baez. He was so busy being a great hockey player, but he was jumping on the Cubs, and he knew it was his Rizzos, he knew it was Bryant's, but he wasn't quite down with Javi quite yet.
Right, and Pardon the Take is who had the picture of the mask. I tweeted it out, Hey Tweet Harry, he is at the Carm.
That's very nice of you to do, appreciate that. Hey, you know what could happen with Scott Darling, Harry?
He could become the number one goalie, is that what you're telling me?
Yes, but not here.
What?
Well, there's this thing that called the NHL Expansion Draft, and there's a team that's going to be in Las Vegas. I don't mean to throw cold water, and we got to take a timeout, and Sam Altra from the Bears is going to be with us at 4:45, who's up for the Walter Payton Humanitarian Award this year. But, you know, there is expansion coming. You can only protect so many. I'm just telling you, he could end up with the Las Vegas Golden Knights living that dream. I wouldn't completely rule it out. Will they protect two goalies? That's what I'm thinking about.
I would hate to lose him. I would just hate to lose him. You know, they've talked about how Marcus Kruger is a guy that the Hawks won't have the enough protection spots. So he might be the guy that goes to Vegas. We'll see. Scott Darling has been terrific. And, you know, Antti Raanta played four straight games for the Rangers. The great Henrik Lundqvist sat. So if Darling is red hot, I could see him, you know, getting more action. But Corey Crawford, when he's healthy, is going to return to between the pipes for the Blackhawks.
There's no doubt. 6:30 night Blackhawks hockey coming up, 720 WGN. 436, 720 WGN. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Harry Tynowitz. That was rough news there by Bob Kessler on the Heimlich maneuver. 96 years old, Harry Tynowitz.
Yeah, you know what's crazy about it is the first thing I thought of is that 2 years ago, there was a woman in Cincinnati having dinner who started. The Heimlich maneuver has been around since 1974, and it's credited with saving more than 50,000 lives in America alone.
It's amazing.
The woman is having dinner, 87 years old, in Cincinnati 2 years ago. She starts choking on her food. People with her having dinner don't know what to do. Her face is turning blue. Her lips are puffing out. An older guy comes over to her, puts his arms around her waist, and does the Heimlich maneuver. It was Heimlich himself. How crazy is that? He had never before used the move to actually save anybody. And he used it on this occasion to save somebody. That's just 40 years.
How do you get
after he made this maneuver, Henry Heimlich happens to be eating in the same dining room as this woman who's about to die. And he comes over and he uses the Heimlich.
Henry Heimlich. Can you imagine your name going down in history because you figured out how to get people to cough up their food? That's amazing. That's one of the great, like, when Henry Heimlich came out of the womb, think about this, Harry.
Yes.
Everybody sets out to do something. You wanted to be a radio, TV, media star. And look,
I wanted to be shortstop for the Cubs.
Me too. Okay, yeah. Well, but look at you now. I mean, you
look at me now.
You've done it. You've lived it. You're
do
building,
we have any Lou Malnati's gift cards
You're building it back, HT. Come on now.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's right.
Future is bright, damn it. You keep your head up. But the point is, here's a guy, you never know what twists and turns you're going to find in life. And this guy's like, hey, if you do this, punch somebody in the stomach really hard, right in the right place, or whatever you would call it, we're going to save lives. Henry Heimlich, he stepped into the unknown and he became a hero.
Yeah, and you know, and he does it in a good way. Like sometimes people, they do something dumb, and then whenever someone does that same stupid thing, they use his name as a verb. You know, like, oh, you know, I really blew that one. You know, and then they use whosever name it was to explain it. But this is, you know, 50,000 lives he's saved. But I just think it's so crazy. Think of how you would feel if, like, the person who did the Heimlich maneuver on you was Heimlich himself.
That is an amazing.
What are the odds?
Not only do is your life saved on the brink of death, and I don't mean to make light of this, but that's really what I feel like doing right now. You're on the brink of death, and Heimlich himself, out of nowhere.
40 years. 40 years after he invented it. That'd be like you invent the screen pass, and you don't call it in a game for 40 years.
I have to invent
something.
Other
people use it. Oh. What do you want to invent?
I don't know. I want
away from Northwestern to get into the tournament.
I want my name to go down. I want when I move on. I want my Wikipedia page to Carm did something. I just want some accomplishment on there.
Well, there's got to be a way that we could get to your Wikipedia page and fudge it.
I
loved it when the Hawks eliminated the Minnesota Wild 3 years in a row from the playoffs. And somebody hacked the Wikipedia page of the Minnesota Wild, so where it said owner, it said Patrick Kane.
No, that's brilliant.
That's awesome. He owns the Wild.
Should we take calls right now? We got Sam Ottra, the Bears, coming up in 5 minutes, who's nominated for the 2016 Walter Payton Man of the Year Award.
Great linebacker.
But it's just so tempting to take calls from people who were saved by the Heimlich maneuver. Like, I had Piero's Pizza when I was 10, 11 years old, Harry.
Uh-huh.
I took a huge bite of that deep dish cheese.
Were you choking to death?
I wouldn't say I was choking to death, but there was a moment there that I can still remember where I was pretty scared. There was too much going down. The breath wasn't going easy. No, I didn't have to do that. I think I was at an early age, was terrified of the Heimlich maneuver. Like, that just looks like it's painful.
See,
I'd rather have that happen to me than the alternative.
When you're pregnant, when you get married and your wife gets pregnant, you go to these classes where they teach you like baby CPR, and you'd know it at the time. And, you know, my kids were, my daughter just turned 16, which is hard to believe.
Lucy.
Yeah. So, I mean, so Wendy and I did it like 16 years ago. And I'm referring to the CPR class. But I don't remember, although, but I don't remember baby CPR right now. And like, I think I know how to do the Heimlich, but I'm not sure that I could do it. You know,
I mean, I'm not going to eat anything the rest of the show because I wouldn't want you to be put in that position.
See, I'm thinking I'm going to go get a cookie.
Those cookies are good.
Those cookies are good. So I like it. So have you ever been saved by the Heimlich? Do you know anyone who was saved by the Heimlich? Can you do the Heimlich? Or what could you invent and put your name on?
847 text again. I did the Heimlich as a waitress and as a mom. Saved both lives. Look at that.
Think of the ability to react when it's your own kid. That's got to be like
terrifying.
You don't even think of. Well, I bet she didn't even think about it. I bet she just reacted.
Just got right after it. 312-981-7200. Dan Lung told me Sam Ottra's gonna be a little bit late. Is that the deal?
Take the calls now. What if it were John Starks? If you were at a restaurant and John Starks was choking, would you even want to give him the Heimlich?
It's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed John Starks, even though...
What?
Well, it was fun to compete against him, Harry.
He was a jerk, and when he came to the Bulls, he didn't want to be on the Chicago Bulls. Screw you, John Starks.
Yeah, but it made it more fun. The Pistons made life more fun. The Green Bay Packers.
Isaiah Thomas, you know, what an accomplished, great NBA player. I mean, Indiana did not fast break. Isaiah Thomas fast broke, okay? He won that championship in 81 when they knocked off Carolina on the night that Reagan was shot. But Isaiah Thomas walking off the court is, we talked about the assistant coach from Wake Forest. And right up there with unsportsmanlike moves, Isaiah Thomas walking off the court after the Bulls always went up to them and shook their hands and said, congratulations, you beat us. Good luck. Hope you win the title.
But I love that they walked off the court, that story still dogs them to this day, that Bill Laimbeer's got to answer to it, Isaiah's got to answer to it, because they were the biggest bunch of worms, and I had the worm in a Dennis Rodman.
I like what you did there. Yeah, right. They were the babies.
Right, but I love that the hate, that was a rivalry, man. That was a real...
Yes, it was.
And so it was fun. I'm trying to grow here. I'm trying to see the positive in things. And having that level of hatred, John Starks, Isaiah Thomas, the Cardinals, whoever you want to throw in there.
Right. And you know, and I mean, I hated that Piston team. I hated the Bad Boys. But you know, the Detroit team I hate the most is the Red Wings.
Right. Cicerelli, North Stars. You go back. You pick any. What Red Wing was your biggest? You going Stevie Y? Where are you going?
See, Stevie Y
right,
is class.
You respect him.
Steve Yzerman is class, plus his best man at his wedding was Darren Pang.
So you going Bob Probert before he was a Blackhawk?
I loved Probert more when he was with the Hawks. But, I mean, there were guys on the Red Wings that were just, you know, Bob Airy and Larry Onoff and...
But all those guys made it more fun, though, right?
Yeah, those were fun games. But yeah. I think it's cool that we're talking about it on the eve of another Bears-Packers clash. And the Packers, I believe if they win tomorrow, they will be 500 with the Bears all time in the series for the first time in about 80 years.
Bears can knock the Packers out of the playoffs tomorrow, basically, if they win.
I'm in.
Hey, Beth. Let's talk about the Heimlich, Beth. Out of nowhere, the Heimlich on the beat, 720 WGN. Did you save someone, Beth?
No, I didn't. My ex-husband, when we were still married, saved me.
Wow.
Yeah, we were eating steak sitting in the living room, and I was choking to the point where I was kind of convulsing, and, like, my legs went out from under me, and I knew I was dying. I literally knew I was dying. And then he came flying at me, and I remember thinking, oh, he's going to kill me trying to do the Heimlich. He's going to break me. And he didn't break me, but it did really hurt, but he saved me.
Wow.
Yet you divorced him.
I did. I divorced him. Even though he saved my life, I divorced his ass, yeah. I did.
You said that with such joy, Beth.
God, if you're listening, I'm very grateful.
Okay, well, Beth. So the Heimlich, it's a normal sized piece of steak, right? You didn't like take like a half a steak. It's just like a normal piece.
You know, I probably was eating too fast, and I might have been laughing. I don't remember. It was a long time ago, but I just can remember. Suddenly, I realized I can't breathe at all.
Maybe I
was not breathing.
Maybe your husband was not giving you the proper attention. You had a lot of feelings, so you were like eating your feelings in the moment. That's why you wanted to eat so much. Or really, it was his fault. And so when he saved you, it's a net even. What do you think?
God, I think you just nailed it. You are so right. That's exactly what happened. I was swallowing the words that I wanted to say. That was it.
And so, Beth, you essentially Heimlich'd him out of your marriage.
Well, I didn't divorce him immediately. I didn't, like, get up off the carpet and go, okay, thanks for saving me. Now I'm divorcing you. It wasn't like that fun.
You'll never do anything that cool again. How long ago was that? How many years ago?
This was before my son Ben was born, so it was about 18 years ago. And I'll tell you, I didn't eat steak for another 3 years at least.
Wow.
I was terrified of it. And I didn't eat alone. Like, I couldn't eat alone in the house for at least a year or two.
I wonder if that's like a common Heimlich side effect.
I
had PTSD totally. Like, I would ask people, have you ever done the Heimlich maneuver? Do you know how to do it? Before I would eat dinner with them. I'm not kidding.
Wow. I just ask people if they know how to French kiss.
Yeah, well, that first. I don't know which is more important. It depends.
Beth, before you go, just real quick, to ballpark it. He does the Heimlich, and then you served him the papers. How many months, years after?
It was a couple years. Yeah,
Jeez, yeah. Beth.
But can I tell you the part about the piece of steak went flying like in an arch across the room and landed like on a plate?
And then what happened?
Was it like an Olympic, Olympic record for steak travel?
Yes, it was. It was. If we had only had, phones with cameras on them, we'd be YouTube sensations.
Beth, I think you're caller of the show. We thank you for sharing.
Give her something then.
Okay, fine.
Got any steak?
Beth, we've got a steak at Lou Malnati's for you. Hang on, okay?
All right, thank you.
You got it.
I can't believe. Oh, my God, you saved my life. So this is another guy I want to see.
Well, it just goes to show you that you can't rest on your laurels on one maneuver.
Yeah, Heimlich calls.
I mean, all right, Heimlich calls. That's what we do. Hey, Ed, welcome to WGN. I don't think you can top that, Ed, but what's your story?
Hey, I was a few years ago, I was at Burger King. I just finished purchasing my meal and saw this kid choking. So I went over and I gave him the Heimlich. And made sure the kid was okay and everything. And I turned around and somebody grabbed my food and took off with it.
Oh, my God.
What?
And then I didn't even have enough money to buy another meal. And Burger King wouldn't even give me another meal. And so I went without a lunch that day. But I just thought it was funny that, you know, that somebody would steal my meal while I'm giving somebody the Heimlich.
What was your meal? Did you go Whopper? I mean, I would steal a Whopper, too.
Yeah, Whopper fries.
Hold on a second. There's a kid who's choking to death in a Burger King. You come over, you give him the Heimlich, you save his life. You're a hero. Some loser grabs your Whopper and runs, and you're telling me that the manager at Burger King doesn't say, oh, here's another Whopper?
No, they said, no, we can't do that. And I was like, all right. So I went without a lunch that day, but I did a good deed, so I felt better. But
And let me give you a piece of advice here. From now on in the future, when you are absolutely 100% deserved another extra Whopper or whatever it would be, You make that manager, you make that person give you what you deserve, and never again will that happen to you. That's my vision for you.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think it would.
I mean, it's got to be like, you know, I mean, I don't understand how you're, like, capable to think when you save someone's life like that, you know, that you would just go up to the counter and go,
I'm still hungry, man. I got to eat.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, his brain had to be racing a million miles per hour. I can't stand it when they put mustard on my food and, because like pickles you can take off, right? Tomato you could take off.
How do we get to this?
Because it's a Burger King story. Going back to Burger King. I Burger King by my house, I always get, you know, double cheese Whopper, ketchup only. Only ketchup, right? Or a double cheeseburger, only ketchup. Ketchup only. So I get in the car, and I'm driving, coming here, I believe, and a few weeks ago, and it's got mustard all over it. It's only mustard. So I go back at the end of the show, at the end of the night, it's like 6 hours later. And I say, hey, I was here earlier, and here's my receipt, and I asked for ketchup only. You gave me mustard all over this thing. I can't eat this with mustard. They go, oh, sorry, we'll give you a new one.
Well, that's their error. By the way, what was our caller's name there? Anybody remember? Who just left? Ed was so over your Burger King ketchup story that Ed hung up on us. Ed just clicked off. Never in radio history does a caller be like, I'll see you later. You're talking to Carrie's Double. You have great burger places by your house. How do you go Burger King? With all due respect to Burger King.
It was drive-thru.
Right, okay, time.
Right, I mean, there are...
I get it. What were you going to say?
I said there's two spectacular burger places that are right by my house, but I have to go in to both of them.
Right.
Which I don't mind going into them.
Right, but you didn't plan accordingly. I get it. All right, the Heimlich. Henry Heimlich died. He's 96 years old. We're having a little tribute to him on the beat. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. He's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Carmen. Waiting on Sam Acho of the Chicago Bears, who hopefully will be with us before we get out of here at 6:30. Blackhawks hockey coming up. Blackhawks and the Blues. Judd Surratt with your pregame at 6:30. Northwestern basketball reminding you on AM 1000 tonight. Starting at 6, the Wildcats and the Dayton Flyers. Big game tonight. Henry Heimlich has passed away at the age of 96. The man who saved lives. Harry, what have you done in your life that you'll go down for? What will you be remembered for outside of entertaining this city for years and years and years and years and years? That's not enough. I need more.
Well, does it have to be a good thing?
No, yes. Yes, it does. Positive. I'm looking for positive.
I will be remembered for always being nice to people.
That's a beautiful thing. That's absolutely beautiful. A kind, kind soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I will attest to you that you absolutely are. Hey, Sue. What's your Heimlich story, Sue?
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. This was several years ago, but the whole family was out for a meal and happened to be an Asian restaurant, and it's neither here nor there, except, and my friend was here from Ohio. She's a nurse. And my mom had this very hot type of spicy soup. Didn't quite realize it was that spicy. And this has happened to me, too, where a person can actually, the throat starts to shut off, but nothing's stuck in there. But my mom was having serious difficulty breathing. So my friend gets up right away and did the Heimlich and actually cracked a couple of her ribs. I'll keep it brief. And again, like I said, nothing was actually stuck in there. And, you know, the restaurant wanted to call 911 and all this. And other people that had medical training were there too. And anyway, if you can get the person calmed down enough to drink some milk or water and so on, which we did, and so my mom was all right. So my friend, we finished the visit, and she goes back home, and I didn't want to tell her. She goes, how's your mom doing? And I said, no, she's doing real well, but a couple of her ribs are cracked. And she's like, oh, no. But
these things happen, Sue. Appreciate you. Good intentions. That's why people are terrified of the Heimlich. You're going to end up with broken ribs.
Well, that's better than being dead.
Bob Kessler up at News.
Right, Bob.
When I learned CPR, you know, back in my lifeguard days, they told us you might break ribs. But, like, you know, that's better than dying of a heart attack.
Hell yeah.
That's true.
I'm not a medical expert, though.
That's a good hot take, though.
You never
broken
have to
ribs
apologize.
Better than death. I agree.
So if we were in a restaurant and somebody was choking, you could save them?
Me?
Yeah. Or
I don't know.
CPR.
I haven't taken CPR in a while. This is high school.
Bob Kessler gives a tremendous newscast coming up in 1 minute. I wouldn't count on him to save lives. That's just me. Knowing Bob the way I do, you'll love him dearly. But if I was picking
Thanks
anyone,
for the vote of confidence.
If I was going Heimlich of anyone I'm around right now, Bob Kessler, Harry Tynowitz, Dan Long, myself, I'm going Dan Long. I'll take Dan Long all day.
And why is that? And not that Dan wouldn't do a great job, but I'm just curious what your criteria is.
Dan is the most physical guy of all of us, and I'm going with the physicality in my Heimlich.
Physicality. Yeah. I swim an hour a day, at least 4 days a week. Is that not physicality?
Dan Long hits the heavy bag. Okay. Swimming?
No, swimming is like one of the hardest sports in the world. Plus, all I can think of is since he mentioned he was a lifeguard in high school, was there a better job for meeting high school girls
There's
than being a high
not
school
a better
lifeguard?
Job for that and many other reasons.
720 WGN.
My message to other players or even younger kids, college kids who want to play in the NFL, will be to be a light in a dark place. Sometimes people see the NFL as a dark place, but if a place is really dark and you shine, that light shines brighter. And so my goal is to be a light for me and my teammates.
That is Sam Acho, good old number 49, outside linebacker for your Chicago Bears, who will try to upset the Green Bay Packers tomorrow afternoon, noon kickoff at Soldier Field. For those of you who are going, congratulations, you are tougher than me. Hey, Sam Acho, are you going to be sleeveless tomorrow, or what's your look in the 0-degree weather?
I'm still trying to make that determination. I talked to a couple of guys on the team, and some guys are going sleeveless, some guys aren't. I know pregame. I think I'll check it out in pregame and make a determination after that.
Now, Pernell McPhee came out and said that, you know, in Chicago, we get cold weather games like this and we don't wear sleeves. He's basically challenging you guys, but I think he's nuts. I think at some point you got to. I mean, if you're in the NFL, you're as tough as you can be, right? You don't have to wear long sleeves to prove it.
Well, it's funny because, you know, he was saying that we were talking about that. And then we actually went and practiced outside in the cold on Thursday when it was 1 degree and negative whatever it was with the wind chill. And we were all in sleeves in practice. And he said, well, the game and practice are different. So we'll see what happens.
See, Sam, I maintain that football players are just abnormal. I think you probably would agree with that, I'm guessing. You guys do things that most 99% of all humans could not do, would not choose to do, but yet you have a strength to you that certainly I don't have. But on the other side, it's like you guys are getting smarter and smarter by the day, too. There's more information out there. I think in 2016, like, you don't need to wait till game time tomorrow. It's going to be freezing. Just put on a little layer, right. you know.
Right, exactly. And it's funny, too, because as I was driving, once again, this is on Thursday, so far the coldest day of the week. I think tomorrow is going to be colder. But on Thursday, I was up at 6, whatever, a.m., and I was driving, and in my car, it said it was 3 degrees. And I said, as I'm driving, I said, who in their right mind would willingly go outside today? And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm actually going to be that guy. So we are a little bit different, but I think we're the better because of it.
You're a Texas guy, too, by the way. We should get that out there. It's not like you were born in the cold. So you're nominated Walter Payton Man of the Year. And I was out at Hallis Hall when you were speaking the other day, and it's so much on your heart giving back. And, I mean, I guess, you know, just to tell the WGN listeners, what does it mean to you to be in this position, to be representing the Bears, representing 34, representing yourself?
Yeah, it means so much to be the Bears nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And especially it means a lot to what my family and I have been doing for the last 28 years. So 28 years ago, my parents started a ministry, Living Hope Ministries, and they go to Nigeria every summer with doctors, nurses, surgeons, dentists, ophthalmologists, pharmacists, pediatricians, the whole nine. And they go to rural villages in Nigeria and give out free medical care. Now, me, I've been going on that trip the last 12 or 13 years. And it's been amazing because we're helping so many people. But now we see an even greater need. Now we're trying to build a hospital out in Nigeria, a Living Hope Clinic. We're trying to build that, and we're raising money to do that. And so it just means a lot to know that hard work isn't going in vain.
Sam, that's tremendous. You know, we hear some bad stuff about NFL players. It's great to know that there's a ton of people like you in the league. The fact that it is this what I've been told by players is it's, you know, even better than winning the MVP. The fact that it's named for Walter Payton, one of the greatest Bears of all time, does that make it more special to you?
Might have lost him. Could have lost him. Definitely lost him.
I blame my question.
No, I think he just got a little bit emotional thinking about it, and he'll be back with us in a second.
I think it was the cold weather.
I blame Dan Long. It was Dan Long's fault. Dan Long created that bad
spell. Executive producer? No, I don't think so.
No, Dan Long is perfect. We know this.
And Bears fans remember, of course, that just a couple years ago, Peanut won the award.
Right. And I asked Jarrett, who might have a little bit of a connection to this award, you would think, perhaps, can't you get Sam Acho this award? He clearly deserves it. He's incredibly impressive. He's been going to Nigeria for 28 years, as he was talking about. And JP just looked at me and was like, dude, that's Roger Goodell. That's the NFL. I have no pull whatsoever.
Right. Jarrett and his sister Brittany will both be there when the award is presented. They're there every year looking good.
On stage presenting, but no pull in the award.
Yeah, and you know every team has one player that's nominated, and it's got to be such a phenomenal feel just to be the guy that gets nominated.
Yeah,
that's up for it.
Well, while we wait for Sam to jump back in here,
yes,
I just want to remind everybody that it's going to be 0 degrees tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears have 3 wins.
It could be the coldest Bears game ever in Chicago, ever.
Yeah, there's a great post-game show on WGN Radio. Hampton will be with Kaz.
And who hosts that?
Mark Harmon has a slight role in there. He does a very nice job.
I love it when you talk about yourself in third person.
Thank you. So the cheapest seat right now on StubHub for Bears and Packers, $36.
$36.
$36.
This is what we've come to, huh?
That's upper corner. Best value. I like that feature on the StubHub. Best value. You can sit in the media deck sideline, section 233, which is about the 20-yard line, for $70. That's like, you could sit, if you want to sit on the lower level, be right next to the field. Oh, Sam's back with us. And see Sam Acho. You can be down there for $95. All of you people that are going tomorrow, you deserve gold stars. Sam, thanks for calling on back here. Your parents were both born in Nigeria, is that correct? Is that the connection, why you've been going back there for 28 years?
Yeah, that's right. And sorry, I think my phone froze up on me. No, no pun intended.
Right. Maybe if it was wearing long sleeves.
Yeah, no, so I know Fernell's like, he cut it off. He's like, I don't want to hear anything about sleeves on this radio call. My parents were born and raised in Nigeria. And so they came over to the United States. They started, for lack of better terms, living the American dream. But they never forgot about their roots, and so that was the connection. They would just go. They would go back and just to visit originally, and they would see friends and family members dying from simple illnesses that a trip to the local pharmacy would cure. And so they decided to do something about it. And that's how Living Hope Ministries was born, and that kind of ambition and that desire to go and to do, and not just to sit by idly and watch. I think that's something that my parents instilled in me as well.
Sam, there's 31 other players that are nominated for this award across the league, but the fact that it's named for one of the greatest Bears of all time, does that resonate more with you and everybody up there at House Hall?
Yeah, well, it resonates a lot. Even Alshon Jeff came up to me today, and he was like, man, Sam, congratulations on being the nominee. That's a really big deal. And you can tell just with everyone, especially in the Chicagoland area, how much it means to them, right? And even to me as well, being a Bear, I got a chance to meet Jarrett and Brittany Payton, Walter Payton's kids. In fact, even though I grew up in Texas, my brother, he was the first one in the Acho household to play football, and he played running back, and he wore number 34 because of Walter Payton. And so the history runs deep, and his influence runs deep throughout any football player, whether you're in Pee Wee or whether you're a professional.
Number 49, Sam Acho, nominee, thank you, for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award with us here on 720 WGN. Sam, when you see, I mean, the big lightning rod around football this year, and you're a guy that's doing things and speaking out a little bit on what's on your heart, when you see a guy like Colin Kaepernick, who just came into Soldier Field a couple weeks ago, and there's so much heat on him for standing up, and whether you agree or don't agree, I'm just curious, your opinion on whether athletes in the spotlight like yourself have a obligation to do something, be it what you're doing or speaking out on a cause? Do you think that not that you can ever require it, but on some level, like in a code, like, hey, you can't just play football, you have to do more?
Yeah, well, I think about myself, right, and I think about other guys around the league, and yeah, we're football players, we play in the NFL, but this is just a career, right? It's a job. It'll be average lifespan is what, 3 years, 4 years? I've been fortunate enough to be in my sixth year, but there's going to come a time when I'm not playing anymore, right? And so just because you have a platform or whether you do or don't doesn't mean you shouldn't speak out, right? I'm more than just a football player. We're all more than just football players. We have, obligations to lead. We're leaders. We are influencers, right? And so I think it's good to use your platform for the greater good, no matter how big or small that platform may be.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are role models. You wanted to be a football player. You didn't necessarily want to be a role model, but you are. So I think it's great that you are leading by example, Sam Macho. So as you know, as you're playing on Sunday, tomorrow, in the freezing cold, and you're smashing, you know, people's helmets and you know, trying to do anything you can to hold the Green Bay Packers from getting a first down, from scoring, do you think that something like this is, you know, people around the league will look at you differently because you are the nominee for the Peyton Man of the Year Award, or are you just another football player?
Well, the award definitely commands respect just because of, you see the guys who are nominated for it. But more than that, I just look at the guys who aren't nominated. I have so many teammates of mine. One in particular, Jimmy State, the defensive lineman, who, I mean, every week he and I are at a local homeless shelter feeding the homeless, right? Guys like Jimmy doing that. John Timu is another guy, right? I think about the other guys who are doing so much great work in the community. So though I'm a nominee for the award, there's so many guys doing great stuff. And so when we're on the field, we're obviously trying to do whatever we can to win the game. But there's a little bit of a deeper level beyond that, and I think that's what some people see with this nomination.
And we should point out, Mark, that a lot of times, you know, different stations will get sent, information from the players' charity or from the team itself saying, hey, here's a, you know, photo op. This guy's going to be somewhere. Sam Macho does a ton of this stuff without sending out any of that information. He just does it because it's the right thing to do.
Feel free to say Harry's. Do you want people to know about it, Sam? Like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I don't know. Like, I think a lot of people know that I'm a Christian, so I'm a follower of Christ. And so I like to read the Bible and look into the Bible. And a lot of what the Bible talks about, it says, all right, if you do things for everybody else to see, like if you do things for the public to see it and you want to get their applause, well, that'll be your reward, right? People who see you in public, they give you an applause, round of applause, great job. That's your reward. Where on the flip side, don't do things just for the public to see. Do things in secret where nobody sees, right? Because God who sees in secret, he rewards you in secret. And so I'm a much bigger fan of God's rewards than people's applause or people's, any reward that a person give me, right? Because, you know, as a Christian, I have peace, right? I think about me. I've been married for almost 3 years. I have a 2-year-old son and a 8-week-old baby girl. And some of these things, like, that was a dream of mine when I was a kid, right? Man, I want to have a family. I want to be a dad. I want to have a beautiful wife. I want to have an amazing family. Like, people can't give me these gifts, right? Only God can give those gifts. And so I really don't like to publicize a lot of what I do. I don't know. I think that, you know, there's another kind of saying, you know, people say, I might have heard this more in the locker room, but people say, real G's move in silence, right? And so I like to kind of move in silence, let people be a little bit surprised by some of the stuff that we're doing.
What goes on in the locker room when you're kind of giving your message around? Do people want to hear it, Sam, or are they in their own world?
Well, it depends. It just depends. A lot of times people do want to hear it, right? A lot of times people say, okay, I know I've been given a lot. I'm in the NFL. Think about the background that we come from, right? A lot of guys come from single-parent homes or come from the hood, come from places where all their friends are either, you know, in jail or no jobs or whatever, yet they're living this dream. And so they want to give back. And so I like to say, okay, we want to do it. Let's make it happen. Right. I have a saying. I say, let's freaking go. Let's go after it. Let's make it happen. And so when I kind of convene guys together to say, hey, let's go to this homeless shelter and feed the homeless, five, six, seven guys showed up. And the next thing you know, some of those same guys kept on coming back, right? So we're more than just NFL players. We are people in the community who care about the betterment of our society.
That's awesome.
Bears linebacker Sam Acho visiting for a little while longer with Mark Kerman and me. I'm Harry Tynowitz on WGN Radio on the Beat. It says in the Bible that on the seventh day, the Bears stop Aaron Rodgers. It's right there in the book of Ditka, my friend. So how are we going to stop the Packers?
So last year, and obviously we don't want to look too much in the past, but I know last year we had a chance to get a victory against Green Bay. And even earlier this year, we were leading going into the fourth quarter against Green Bay. And so I'm confident in our abilities, confident in the game plan. I know a lot of people like to count us out, but we're ready. We're excited. We are we're treating this game just like any other game. We're going out to win it.
A lot of people, I mean, one thing I got to give you credit for, Sam, to me, you guys are playing hard every week. It's been a long season, obviously, on the field in a lot of ways, but you guys could have had Detroit last week. You were right there. Am I crazy to be talking up Matt Barkley? Because I'm kind of falling in love with Matt Barkley, Sam Acho.
I think we're all falling in love with Matt Barkley. So funny enough, he actually played with my brother in Philly. So he was with my brother with the Eagles, and so when he signed with the Bears, my brother texted me and was like, "Bro, Matt, first of all, he's an awesome guy, right? He's one of the best guys you'll ever meet." And I obviously knew how great of a player he was just because his time at USC and hearing from my brother when he was in Philly and then also when he went to spend some time in Arizona. But it excites me to see somebody who is such a high-quality man like him doing so great on the field as well. Right? What you see on the field, he's a better guy off the field.
Wow.
That's very, very good to hear. There's been rumors flying lately that your defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, might not be here next year. How do rumors like that start?
Yeah, that's your answer is probably just as good as mine because I really have no idea how some of these rumors start. To be honest, all we can really look at is what's right ahead of us, which is Green Bay. And so, I remember hearing that, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, and I was like, where the heck does something like this come from? So, to be honest, we'll see what happens in the future, but I'm excited about what he does bring to the table, which is a great game plan every week, and you see, you know, one of the top 10 defenses in the league.
Sam, we're up against the break here, so we appreciate your time. I am curious, though, does Vic Fangio, when he goes to dinner, does he wear sweatpants, or does he ever actually put on a slack or a jean?
Sweatpants everywhere, all the time, usually above his belly button. I'm just saying. He's old school.
Unbelievable look.
Gives me something to aspire to.
I mean, most guys have, like, advanced. Most guys, right, Sam, they've advanced to a wind pan at least, like an upper level. This guy's just sweatpants 1972.
And it's funny, too, hearing him talk, because Vic, you know, we start watching film, and Vic will be like, yeah, you know, well, you hear him talking, it sounds like, I mean, I think he was there. I really legitimately think he was there when the 3-4 defense was invented. He was a part of the original, no joke, you might have to ask him to verify. I really think he was there. You listen to some of the stories that he tells, and all I can do is just applaud him because I'm like, man, you've been doing this for, first of all, longer than I've been alive. Second of all these analysts that talk about, well, this is how it should be played. He's like, no, I was there when it started. This is what this defense is all about, and that's why you see his defenses be so successful everywhere he goes.
Hey, Sam, thanks for the time. We really appreciate it. Best of luck on being the winner of the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. We're rooting for you, and good luck tomorrow against the Packers. Go get Green Bay.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Sam Acho, number 49, outside linebacker, your Chicago Bears. Dan Hampton's a huge fan of Sam Acho.
Thanks, Sam. Terrific. He should be a huge fan of him, and I love the way he talks about his teammates. Boy, Vic Fangio and Wade Phillips, two guys that have just, taken the 3-4 to a different level.
That was and some positive stuff there on Matt Barkley, huh?
Great, great stuff on Matt Barkley.
Jumped onto that. All right, we got to catch up here, get a quick timeout. 720 WGN. WGN. Thanks to Sam Acho, nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. Hope he takes it. Great to talk to him. Harry Tynowitz, I'm Mark Carmen, with you for another hour or so in advance of Blackhawks hockey, Blackhawks and the Blues. And if you're looking for Northwestern basketball tonight, it's on AM 1000 taking on the Dayton Flyers. Cats are 39 RPI. The Flyers are 22. It's a big game tonight.
I'm very excited, and you got to listen. Got to listen to those guys. I'm going to the Thursday night game. I will be in attendance as Northwestern takes on Houston Baptist.
Another marquee matchup. As the, I think that's the last game before the conference.
Big Ten conference play.
They go on the road to Penn State. Of course, the Cats in the Pinstripe Bowl with Pitt coming up. I have my new favorite cat. Who I interviewed for a pregame show on the bowl game, Ifade Odenebo, who was the highest-ranked recruit coming into Northwestern. He was a 205-pound defensive lineman. As a senior, he's 265, and he had 4 sacks in the Iowa game, which turned around the Cats' season, which they didn't do as great as they wanted to, but still made it to a bowl, which was an accomplishment, starting 1-3. Ifade coming over, both his parents born in Nigeria. And he was the first son born in the U.S. His mom, they moved over because mom wanted to be a doctor. So they were all about education, 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 right? And, Dad, I think I might be pretty good at football. Ifade, Ifade. Like he does this, he imitates his father, and it's great. You are here to be a student, not an athlete. No, but, Dad, I think I'm pretty good at this football.
Well, and you, he gets to be both.
Yeah. So, and then I'm like, well, your parents should be pretty happy. I mean, Northwestern. Ifade, do you know that Northwestern is number 12 academically in the country? Yes, I do, Dad. Okay, well, that's cool. You can go there and play football. It was a fun conversation. So, all right, back to the Bears, Harry. 312-981-7200. We want to hear from you if you're going tomorrow. And we also want to hear from you on how much money it would take for you to go. Because there's if you gave me tickets right now and I wasn't doing Hamp and OB and Kaz and I could go, there's no way I'm going out there in 0-degree weather to watch the Bears play the Green Bay Packers. You got to be out of your mind. And if just a hypothetical for you, because I do love radio hypotheticals, I've got 2 tickets to the Bears for you for tomorrow, and I've got 2 tickets to Hamilton. Which one are you taking? 2 for Hamilton, a play at 2:00.
People know it's a play. Well, I'm very proud of you that you know like what time a matinee would start on a Sunday.
Well, Hamilton's like a big deal.
Right. Most matinees are 2. Maybe you get a 2:30 once in a while, some theaters. Okay. But yeah, 2:00.
I mean, I didn't really know that it would start at 2. The matinee started at 2. I just kind of checked StubHub and like the Bears pop up and then Hamilton pops up.
Okay.
Hamilton or the Bears? I think sports guys are stupid. Might go Hamilton.
This is a no-brainer. I mean, I love the Bears. And what's better than Bears-Packers? I would go Hamilton in a second. I would go Hamilton in a second.
39 tickets available for Hamilton tomorrow at 2:00.
What's the cheapest ticket there?
Private Bank Theater. Cheapest ticket, and you can get a $129 ticket in the balcony for Hamilton. Which is, for Hamilton prices, that's not terrible.
That's a bargain.
Right, $129 for Hamilton. If you go Bears, $129 ticket. Hang on a second here. Let me search that for you, Harry. I can't believe you just said you'd go Hamilton over Bears.
In a heartbeat. And I love the Bears. Okay, now, seeing Hamilton on a Sunday, you know, when it's, you know, we're near the end of the season. So, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the whole NFL slate. I think there's 4 games at noon besides the Bears I'm really interested in. The Giants and Lions, both those teams headed for the playoffs. I can't tell you how psyched I am to watch the Titans and the Chiefs. Both those teams have playoff aspirations, and Andy Reid, a genius again. I love Travis Kelce. And then you got 2 great running backs to watch at noon tomorrow, Le'Veon Bell, Steelers-Bengals, and Purple Jesus resurrected. Adrian Peterson back tomorrow. The guy has the quickest recovery time of any athlete ever. Vikings and Colts. So 4 games I want to watch besides the Bears and Packers tomorrow. But, you know, so I don't know if I would go to Hamilton tomorrow afternoon. But if you gave me 2 tickets to Hamilton one day this week or the Bears, I'd go Hamilton.
I've got 6th row, 50-yard line, section 110 available on StubHub for $150. So $150 for the 6th row or $139 balcony Hamilton.
Jeez. I mean, you're insane if you go. Look, if you're
who
in
goes
one of the suites,
who
if you're one of the if you're in one of the suites tomorrow, that's such a different experience than being out in the cold. you know, I was lucky enough to go to Bears playoff games on their way to the Super Bowl, and those games were really cold, but we brought newspaper to put under our feet. And once the Bears took the lead, the weather doesn't bug you as much. Once they start shutting out the Giants, once they start shutting out the Rams, the weather's not bugging you so much when they're whitewashing the opposition. But Pernell McPhee this week challenges his teammates, and here's the quote. He says, "It's a longstanding tradition in Chicago to not wear sleeves when we have cold games like this," and challenge his teammates to play short-sleeved.
Yeah.
No, when Steve McMichael and Dan Hampton weren't wearing sleeves in the freezing cold for a playoff game, that was intimidating, but it was intimidating because they were Dan Hampton and Steve McMichael. Those guys could wear parkas that say Lincoln Park Zoo, and they would be intimidating because they played awesome on the defensive line. McPhee is nuts to tell his teammates that they got to be, you know, rugged and macho and tough and go, you know, without any sleeves.
Four Bears who didn't wear sleeves to the open portion of practice the other day where the media is allowed in. Alshon Jeffrey, right?
Yeah. He's been at home getting, you know, he's been in the deep freeze.
There's some irony there somewhere. Cody Whitehair, rookie who's comported himself pretty well. Josh Bellamy, who can't catch the football. And Demontre Hurst, all not wearing sleeves.
Who made a very nice play last week.
Yes. Did you see what Martellus Bennett said this week about sleeves? Vintage Martellus Bennett.
What did Martellus, Black Unicorn, hit me up.
Martellus sleeves, as I'm Googling it to get the exact quote for you, but he basically said that players not wearing sleeves, it's because you're, quote, it's sexier. You just feel sexy when you go no sleeve, Harry.
Did you see his brother's sack dance Thursday night when Michael Bennett
I love Michael Bennett. I thought for a second we were going to have Michael Bennett when Martellus was
here. I remember. I thought he was coming too. 72 for the Seahawks. He did sort of a swing your hips, kind of, you know, sexy swing your hips dance when he got his sack, which was later called back because of a teammate's penalty.
Bennett's exact quote, by the way, is same reason women wear less on Halloween. It's sexier.
Yeah, Halloween's, you know, always been about as cool as your costume is. If you're a woman and you get something that has the word naughty in front of it, that is the best costume. Naughty nurse, you know, naughty teacher, you know, naughty whatever. That's not a bad look if you're a woman.
Football, we're the only sport that doesn't cancel, Martellus Bennett. The only thing that cancels us out is lightning. We play through everything. That's what makes the sport so cool. Why do players not wear sleeves? Same reason women wear less on Halloween. It's sexier. It's cold during Halloween, too. But there's a bunch of sexy cops out there. Martellus, ladies and gentlemen. I miss Martellus. I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed Martellus. Martellus was productive on the field and interesting off the field.
He was the best soundbite going when he was here.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the number one soundbite. He could work as a stand-up comedian. But I just think it's insane, this idea that you have to have short sleeves, you know, to be the toughest of the tough. There are baseball players that, you know, always wear long sleeves when the weather is brisk. This isn't going to be brisk. This is going to be, you know, sub-zero.
708 texting in six figures to sit in that cold, no less. That's a little steep, but okay. Six figures to the goal, no less. I'd rather take the Hamilton tickets. At least I could sell those and go back home to my warm blanket.
He's taking them to sell them. I never even thought of that.
Yeah, but that's not legal.
Do you think there'll be someone there tomorrow at the Bears game who is going to be dumb enough to take their shirt off?
Always going to happen. Always want attention. People love to get the camera on them. 630 texting. They don't look sexy out in the field, especially in tomorrow's weather. They just look stupid. But somehow, some way, I do look at them when they're not wearing the sleeves like, you are tougher than me. It's true. You didn't need to say that again because I give it to you all day long. But there is a certain level of, look at how tough they are. They don't even wear sleeves.
Well, I mean, they're definitely, you know, bad. You know, I mean, you go out there tomorrow, you know, that's bad. But you don't... You know, the guy who's better, you know, who's tougher, the guy that's not wearing sleeves or the guy that, you know, makes the great play?
I'm going to ask Campo tomorrow. Campo, what do you think about guys that wear sleeves? What do you think he's going to say?
No.
What do you think? Oh,
we sleeves shouldn't. They should outlaw sleeves.
Quick time up coming up here. We lost one of the greats this week, America's TV dad, who Harry has a hot take on. There's a lack of respect going on here. I'll leave it at that. 720 WGN. Alan Thicke, Harry Tynowitz, 69 years old. Dr. Seaver on Growing Pains, America's TV dad. I texted you this week. I'm like, Harry, we should do a little tribute to Alan Thicke because he died doing exactly what he loved, which was playing recreational hockey. I just love that part of the story. Hate to lose Alan Thicke, but the guy went out doing, he was with his buddies, he was playing hockey. This is my vision for how I go someday on the tennis court, on the hoop court, on the softball diamond. You know, maybe I'm up at plate. I hit a big bomb to center, rounding second base on my way to my last home run, and then it gives out, and that's it.
See,
at like 93 years old, by the way. I don't want to go at 69.
At 93.
I'm still hitting bombs. I know when I can do it.
See, I could see you playing someone in tennis this week who's 93, and they would die. But I don't know. I mean, I can't go out doing something you love. I mean, yeah. I mean, ideally, yeah. It'd be horrible to die like you're on the side of the road fixing your flat tire and you have a heart attack.
Right. I mean, most people end up getting sick and they got to go through an illness. And you know, you do get time there to, as we get a little bit on the depressing side here. But there's time around that. But here, you're just living, man. You're going. It's cool. And then, okay. I mean, that's why you should tell your loved ones every day how much they mean to you.
I do. I tell my loved ones, and most of them, you know, listen to me. I have a friend we'll just call Mac. He planned out his funeral. To him, like, he didn't really care how he went, but he just wanted to make sure his funeral went exactly like he wanted it to. He like, planned out the songs to be played at his funeral.
What's at your funeral? What songs do you have?
Well, I would, Springsteen, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think, the only untitled track Bruce ever released on an actual album that wasn't a bootleg. It's called Terry's Song, and it's the last song on Magic. And that would be one. I lost a friend, God, my dear friend Stephen Baker. In fact, the anniversary was this week. When Stephen Baker passed, he loved The Who. And I called up another guy that loved The Who and said, I've got this friend, we're having a memorial for him, what's the perfect Who song to play? And he said, play Love Rain Over Me. And to this day, it was 25 years ago, sadly, and every time I hear that song, you know, I think, oh, man, we picked the perfect Who song. And there's rain falling, you know, at the beginning and stuff. But the idea of Alan Thicke going out playing hockey is great. I'm sad, like you said, it's horrible he died. I'm sad we lost him. 69 is still very, very young, way too soon. But yeah, it's great that he went out as early as he did. I disagree with you, though, that he's a great, you know, one of the greatest TV dads.
Who's your best TV dads?
Well, I mean, I've got,
you know, Mike Brady?
No, I wouldn't put Mike Brady was a really good TV dad.
Love Mike Brady.
Not in my top five.
Let's hear them.
Should we ask other people, or do you want these now?
We could do that. 312-981-7200, favorite TV dads. Jim's got an inspiring story. See, the other question out there for you. I mean, did Alan Thicke go, like, if you could plan, not knowingly, and I know that everybody wants to, for most of us at least, want to live forever.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still working on that, how to figure that out. I think we can, you know, by the time that, you know, maybe 10 years down the line, we'll have this figured out and we'll all just you know, be able to.
It could happen.
Right.
Right. When people are going to fly to the moon one day, you know, we're flying to the moon left and right.
Right. So who knows? But if you had to pick it, I mean, for me, I think it is on the tennis court. I'm running for a forehand. I'm set up. Nice, solid, smooth stroke right down the line, passing Abraham Goldberg at the net. And I give a little fist pump, and then I don't remember anything else. And that's it. 90, 93, 94, 95 years old. Still out there, Harry. Still following through. Still having the butt of the head right there by my left eye.
That'd be
perfect form.
What comes to mind now is being in the winner's circle at the racetrack, being in the winner's circle at Arlington, or Hawthorne, and you know your family's horse or your friend's horse wins, and you're in the winner's circle and you go, or being at Wrigley Field, or dying on the air. Of course, I've done that.
Well, so have I, actually, in a prior radio life. But by the way, people texting in, including my softball coach, Coach Hendo, just make sure you touch home first. The man's always about the victory.
Smart.
Always about the W. Kenny, I see you.
Got to stay focused.
Right.
I wonder what Araldus would say about Coach Hendo.
The perfect death. That's what we're doing to start 6 o'clock hour.
TV dads, I thought.
That too. 720 WGN. Now the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some. Harry, why are we playing the theme to Different Strokes?
Because this week we lost Alan Thick, who was one of your favorite TV dads of all time.
1985 to 1992, Growing Pains, my formative years. It was I grew up on Michael Jordan and Alan Thick and Kirk Cameron.
And no disrespect to the beloved Mr. Thick, but he doesn't make my list of top 10 TV dads. And then you also brought up the point that he was playing ice hockey, his favorite thing to do when he passed. And how great would it be to go out doing what you love? What would be your ideal way to go out?
Which is a great dual radio topic. Did you know that he wrote Different Strokes?
I did know that. Sherwood Schwartz wrote both the Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island.
I mean, what's the connection there? I missed that. It's over my head.
No, sure. So the theme songs.
Oh, okay.
Two of the greatest theme songs. You're talking theme songs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so
now, listen. Have you ever looked at the words out of Different Strokes? I was getting emotional earlier this week just reading it.
No, why don't you give them to me?
Now the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you, Harry Tynowitz, may not be right for some. A man is born. He's a man of means. We got the wealth. Then along came two. They've got nothing but their genes. How beautiful is that?
That's good.
And then everybody's got a special kind of story. You do. So do you, Dan Long. Everybody finds a way to shine. It don't matter what you got. Not a lot. So what? They'll have theirs. You'll have yours. And I'll have mine. And together we'll be fine. How beautiful is that? Everybody's got a story to tell, Harry.
That's a wonderful song. Doesn't make my top 10 TV themes, though.
Who are your top 5 TV dads? Let's hear.
Well, I've got 10.
Oh, you got 10.
I've got a lot.
All right, hang on.
I can get them down to 5 pretty easy.
Yeah, I
can get this down.
Okay,
to 5.
You think about that. Let's take a call. I don't want to.
No, I understand.
We got to tease it out here. We got everybody's going to stay on the radio to find out what you got. Hey, Matt, welcome to 720 WGN. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Thank you for bringing up Alan Thick. I was actually hoping somebody would this week in a segment. You know, I post on Facebook whenever a celebrity that I grew up with passed away, and everybody's always like, why do you have to be so morbid? And I respond to them by saying, I was really sick when I was younger, and I only really had books and TV for quite a while. So to me, I didn't know that I Love Lucy was on 50 years before I was born. I just thought it was, for some reason, it was in black and white. And I didn't know that the same guy from Amen wasn't George Jefferson. He was a totally different character. So I always wondered where we were. So where's Flores? So I grew up with a lot of these people. And to me, I'm not like insane like cable guy Jim Carrey insane. But a lot of these people are family to me on some level, in some weird way. And I feel when they're gone. I mean, Alan Thick was definitely in my top five. I mean, there's also Hal Williams from 227, Ward Cleaver, and Archie Bunker. I mean,
I can't believe that you just put, that's fantastic here, Matt. You just went in the same top five. Archie Bunker, All in the Family, and 227.
How about it?
Which doesn't get enough respect. It's a great show on a Saturday night when you had nothing going on in high school like me. Love 227.
Yeah, you know, Archie Bunker.
No, 227 was amazing.
Archie Bunker used to call Gloria a little girl. That was, and he gave his son-in-law a hard time. Strong.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah,
go ahead, man.
When I was younger, I got in trouble because I didn't know any better. I was like, Meathead, get over here.
Well, you learned, Matt. That's okay.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for calling, Matt. Appreciate you.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, that's, see, Harry? It's a man who's connected to Alan Thicke.
Yeah.
People get raised. Mr. Drummond, Different Strokes.
I love Mr. Drummond.
Mr. Drummond was a man of integrity, Harry.
I love Different Strokes. I love Mr. Drummond, Philip Drummond. He was excellent. All right, so I've got my list down to 8.
312-981-7200. Favorite TV dads.
All right.
Your favorite death. Go ahead.
From Frank Costanza, George's dad from Seinfeld.
Oh, he's so annoying.
He's a great character. Now, if you know, and I've got another one who's maybe not the best lessons learned kind of dad, but just like favorite character, Frank Barone from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Okay.
But now, if you're doing,
I want to be inspired here.
All right. Well, and then of course Homer.
Oh well. Okay. Now we're at the top of the food chain.
All right. So if I had to put a list of like the five dads who cared most about their family, the list begins with Andy Taylor, Sheriff Andy Taylor from Andy Griffith Show. Okay, Opie and Andy. And if you grew up in Chicago, you know, it was on Channel 9. It's still on today. You're shaking your head at me.
It's just so, so old. But he's a great man. He's a great. I didn't watch it a ton.
Right.
It's black and white.
Yeah. I'm not arguing with you that it's old. Okay. Current, Phil Dunphy, Modern Family.
It's a great one. It's a great one. I love Modern Family.
Okay,
a lot of people are texting in Al Bundy, by the way. That's like the fifth person texting Al Bundy.
Right, and Jay Pritchett on that show, of course, is Al Bundy. Here's another one. I hope you don't say it's too old, but did you ever watch The Wonder Years?
Love The Wonder Years.
All right, Kevin's dad, Jack Arnold.
Jack Arnold's a good man.
Okay, he was a great dad. He taught life lessons. I really, really loved him.
Is Mr. C on this list if we're going old school? Let's get some happy days going on here.
He's one of the ones I crossed off.
You crossed off Mr. C?
Yeah, because I had too many old school and I had to pare the list down. How about this? Walter White from Breaking Bad.
Okay.
He risked everything for his family.
Take a pause because I want to get Tyrone in here because I think he has my favorite TV dad. Tyrone, welcome to WGN.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
We're good, Tyrone. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, just trying to drive around the city of Chicago with all the snow on the ground and the cold weather. And I was listening to the station. You guys were talking about TV dads. You know, when I heard about Alan Thicke dying, it kind of hurt because, he was a good dad. He was a good man on TV. And everything, and you know, I kind of grew up with that show as well. You know, watching them get into trouble and do different things and everything. But I tell you, when you talk about TV dads, one of my favorite TV dads was James Evans on Good Times. I mean, this man was, and I think we should have more dads like him because he was sturdy, he was loving and kind, and he was surviving, and he taught his kids lessons, and he was a good man.
Good. Tyrone, I'm totally with you. You watched an episode of Good Times. You came out of there like you learned more life lessons from 30 minutes of Good Times than you'd learn at school in a week. Good Times brought it.
I love your TV dad suggestion. He was a great TV dad, and that is one of the best TV themes of all time.
It's absolutely.
Yeah, he should be more dads like him. He just be more dads like him in the world. But it was just such a good show. Yeah, you learn a lot of life lessons and. You got to see how things are in the world and how things really are in the world. And it was a good show all around. It was
temporary rip-off. Good times. Easy credit layoff. Good times.
Man of integrity. Thanks, Tyrone. We got the theme song
Thank
for you.
Keeping
your head above water. Making a way when you can. Temporary layoff.
You did not mess with James Evans or Florida.
Gave him love. Oh, right. Florida was great. There's one more great TV dad.
Yeah.
And I feel like because of recent developments off camera, that this TV dad will be lost in history. But Dr. Cliff Huxtable.
Oh, Dr. Cliff. Well, he will be lost because of recent things. That's for sure. But okay. Cliff Huxtable had his moment. He did. Too bad we didn't know what was going on behind the scenes with... Do I have to say a legend on that? No,
you don't.
I don't.
There's like 35 witnesses. Right. 35 complaints.
Some people are texting in Fred Sanford from Sanford & Son, which was... I mean, the proof was in the pudding with Lamont. What a fine character Lamont was. Rick Grimes from The Walking Dead. You watch The Walking Dead?
I gotta be honest, no.
It's okay. It's a crazy show that I do watch, but... Ward Cleaver's in there. Did we mention Ward Cleaver already?
One of the callers did.
Okay, my bad. Do you feel satisfied?
It was good. I mean, we had a lot of intense sports talk, and we talked about the situation with the Wake Forest coach, and we dealt with some heavy stuff. We needed that break, TV Dad.
Yeah, we're going to do a tribute to a great man on the way out here. We've got one segment to go before Blackhawks hockey. We did lose one of the greatest guys around the sporting world this week, 720 WGN. Mark Harmon, Harry Tynowitz. We lost one of the great sideline reporters and just great men, former Willie the Wildcat, born in Batavia, Craig Sager. He was at Wrigley Field this year to sing the seventh inning stretch. I caught up with him then, a little tribute to Craig. Here's the conversation. All right, with the great Craig Sager, who is looking as good as he always looks with the white suit, the blue shirt. What was the
Cubs tie.
And the Cubs tie. I mean, you look fantastic. Well, how did the genesis of what you wear come to be? Did somebody say, hey, Craig, dress flamboyantly, you'll get attention, your career will take off? I mean, how did it all come to be?
That wasn't like that. I grew up in Batavia out here, and it was a very boring town back when I was growing up there. It's a lot better now. And for our senior picture, you walked in, and they had two blazers. It was a navy blazer and a black. Which one do you want to put on for your picture? And I thought that was boring. And so I was a big fan of the Monkees. By the way, it's their 50th anniversary today. It's a group. And I had a Nehru jacket like Davy Jones had or Mickey. And it had a big old collar and it's electric blue. And so I wore that for my picture. And they go, Sega, no, you got to wear one of these. I said, they said blue or black. And they go, yeah, and navy blue. I said, no, let's take it. And they go, they may not let you be in the yearbook. I said, well, I'll take my chances. You know, it's so small. I was in, you know, all the sports, National Honor Society speech and everything else. So they had to put my picture in the yearbook. So they printed it. Now even today, when we go back to reunions, whatever, everybody's sitting there looking all the same. And they're even this electric blue shirt and the collar and the Nehru jacket. So it's just something I always like to do. I like to be lively. It's not so much for attention because I'm more comfortable. When I go play golf, you know, I don't want to be out there in gray and black. You know, I have loudmouth pants and wild colors. And some people say they don't match. And I go, well, they look like it did when I put them out of my room.
So you understood leverage at a young age there. Hey, they're going to have to put me in there. I deserve to be in the yearbook.
In Batavia, I worked for a little while, yeah. But then I worked at Kansas City. And, you know, they really didn't appreciate all the bright colors in the winter. And then CNN was starting out. I was employee 343. And now they have over 20,000. And they wanted me to tone down, and so they used to, like, put restrictions on what I could wear and all. So finally, when I got to the point where I was in the NBA and on the sidelines, and even David Stern put in that dress code for players. He put in one for me and told me he didn't want me to wear a lot of that stuff. And I was going through, and he was at a game that I didn't really know he was going to be there, and his wife was there, and he gave me this look like, oh, Sager, take that off. And his wife goes, oh, Craig, you look so good. And commissioner goes, what are you saying? She goes, I think he looks great. Sports is supposed to be fun, and he looks great. And that was my breakthrough.
That's awesome. And I love that the wife trumped the former commissioner. That's a beautiful thing. How did you, I guess, what was your strategy in connecting with the athletes as well as you have? Because, I mean, everybody's been watching the playoffs, and so many guys have come up to you, and just so much heartfelt stuff. I mean, it really seems like, they're not just doing a job talking to you, but they like being around you. What was your approach that way?
I think it's trust. I mean, we're partners. I'm not the investigative reporter that's going in there trying to stir up crap. I don't deal with negative things. I try to be positive. We're trying to promote these guys. They understand it. I've always been like that. When I was in Atlanta those early years, you know, my friends were the guys on the team. When I was in Kansas City, George Brett was one of my best friends. And Doc Rivers, Randy Whitman, Scott Hastings all played for the Hawks. And we opened a bar together, Jocks and Jills. It's still there, you know, since 1987. It's almost 30 years later. So I think they've seen me over the years, and I haven't burned bridges, and I haven't, you know, trashed people. And I'm always optimistic. You know, I don't say this guy's terrible, or I certainly wouldn't go on the air and say Oklahoma City choked. I wouldn't talk like that at all. You know, I just don't do negative reports.
Who do you like in the finals?
Well, Golden State, coming out of the West, which was so much tougher this year, and with the best record in the history of the game, you would think they have the edge. But last year, you know, LeBron didn't have Kyrie Irving, and he didn't have a healthy Kevin Love. So they're going to be a formidable opponent. I'd love to see Cleveland win it, not only for LeBron, but more importantly for the city, just like I want to see the Cubs win, not only for the Cubs, but for the city of Chicago. But then again, if you're going to have the best record in the history of the game, you almost have to have a championship. You need that exclamation mark at the end, you know, to punctuate it. So I don't know who's going to win. I think Cleveland will win the, you know, first game for sure at home. I mean, on the road, they'll get, not going to win, but they'll put up a good fight because I think Golden State's tired after playing the seven games. So keep an eye on game one. Game one could determine it.
Craig Sager, I'll let you get back to your family in just one split second, but nobody signs up for this, yet you're an inspiration to so many right now, the way you're living. To see how you're connecting, people reaching out to you, I mean, what's that been like?
It's been amazing. You know, I realize now it's not about me. It's about what I represent. I'm fighting for everybody who's got cancer or been associated with it. Everybody knows somebody in their family who's been afflicted, or friends, relatives. It affects everybody. And I'm just out there to prove that, you know, don't let it affect how you live. Don't let it affect how you think. And in my case, I don't let affect my job. I just try to stay positive every day, and I try to do what I can. And if I have to go to the hospital twice a week like I do to get blood products and go in every 3 weeks to get 8 days of chemo, I'll do it. And I'm not going to let that bring me down. I'll be out of the hospital, and I'll be out of the treatments, and I'll have a great attitude and blessed to be around for every day. And hopefully we're going to find medical breakthroughs, and we're going to find a cure for this.